welcoming everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best-dressed fan regardless of the season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215, that's TEN1215, at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm my host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who loves when bad things happen to Baylor, Kyle Carver. Kyle, how are you?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it was a nice week for that, generally. I like when good things happen to Texas, and that also means that they can take care of Baylor. So, yes, we're aligned.
Some good things happened to Texas while bad things happened to Baylor. Texas, we'll talk, open up with softball, took on the Bears and swept them through. We'll talk about the baseball team avoiding a disaster in Houston. Got a lot to go through in the down the 40 because it was a big weekend. Just a lot of news overall, big news dump episode today. But we'll start on the diamond. They took a 6-4 win over Texas State in the midweek, the ladies, the number two softball team in the land, and then decided to put the absolute boots to Baylor, number 24, over the weekend. 14-1 run rule on Friday, 9-6 on Saturday, 9-5 on Saturday, just taking what they needed to taking what they need to against the Bears, and they're going to get a big bump in the rankings this week. They'll probably be number one based on how things shook out this week.
Yeah, I mean, this was a good week for Texas softball, a bad week for everyone else. Quite bad week for anyone not named Texas. In fact, if you look at the top 12 teams, only Texas and University of Washington, the only top 12 to not drop a game this week, and Washington had their weekend series canceled. So it's pretty much Texas stands alone, which is great. Great week. Remember, they beat OU on Sunday. So I'm extending my week here. But yes, they did what they needed to do, and that just the upset flu was going around the rest of the top 25. Iowa State upsetting, you know, Oklahoma State. Love to see it for the series win there. Big win for them. Series losses, not just games, series losses for LSU and UGA. Those are top 10 teams, number against unranked teams. Number 9 Florida against a lower ranked team. It was a carnage week for sure. In Texas, relatively unscathed, right? After the 6-4 ranked win over Texas State in the midweek, they jumped in and just kind of did their thing against the Bears, and you know, they weren't all easy. They had to come down a bit from the emotional high of beating OU. You know, did they have it in the tank for another weekend? And they did, right? And in upset weekend, they survived and ultimately won in different ways all three of their weekend games.
Talk about three different ways. The combination of ridiculous pitching on Friday plus a 9-run top of the sixth to blow that game open. You go from being up 4 to being up 13 in that one, and really just blowing it open for Texas. Kevin got the win on that one, so absolutely great for them. Saturday, Texas was actually down in that one in the first inning, and then tied it in the first inning as well. Both teams scored in seven consecutive half innings, third through the seventh, which was absolutely ridiculous for them. And then Saturday, Reese Atwood hit the wall to give Texas a 2-0 lead, and then drove in a run to extend it later, and then hit a 241-foot home run later that extended the lead to 8-3, which is absolutely ridiculous. And then Cavan came in again to get a save. So it's just a big convergence of how Texas wins and how Texas Texas can win, right? This is the type of team that looks like right now that regardless of what they get from the circle, regardless of what they get from the plate, they're going to find a way to win. It doesn't hurt that Reese Atwood is hitting .406 on the year, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Reese Atwood she started so hot, and I don't want to say leveled off. It just was, you know, supernova to a very, very good player, is now heating back up and has been really hot this weekend. Had two different games with three hits, drove in a lot of runs, and, you know, a .406, 13 homers, and 61 RBIs is a good season. A lot of softball still to play, but that's, you know, enough that she's hoping to get in the record book. She's five home runs back. She's now in the top 10 single season list, but five back from Taylor Hoagland's single season record in 2012 of 18 home runs, and her 61 RBI are just also five back from tying Lindsey Stevens in 2014 and Taylor Tom in 2013, their single season 66. So Reese Atwood continues to be, again, if you can hit over 400, be in the top 25 in home runs and be number three right now in RBIs, like, you know, you're doing something right against some really good pitching in the Big 12. Remember that their last basically, you know, dozen games have been against ranked teams. So they it's not like they're playing cupcakes, right? And you know, not to besmirch anyone, but the home run and RBI leader is just teeing off on junior high competition up in, I don't even know what division Miami of Ohio is in, but good for them. You know, they're crushing the ball. But yeah, Reese Atwood doing it in big games against the best pitching. It's great to see. But it shouldn't be lost that some other Longhorns are contributing, right? Ashton Maloney cracked the top 15 in NCAA batting average, right? She's actually leading Texas in batting average. Texas as a team right now is second in the nation in batting average. They're also fourth in team ERA. So it's pitching, it's hitting, they're doing all the things. They're you know, scoring lots of runs. Their season total is just dominant over the other teams, but they're also winning, you know. They had 1-0 win against Texas State earlier, and they're winning on ninth inning, you know, putouts, late runs in situations. They're timely, they're clutch, they're making the plays, good defense. I mean, it is just a really well-rounded team. Again, you don't get number one, stay number one while everyone else around you crumbles if you're not doing something right. So they have played some really good teams, and they have come out the victor more often than not.
Yeah, there's something to be said about surviving and advancing in a conference like the Big 12 and in what NCAA softball is this year. Four ranked wins this week, a streak of six, count them, six ranked wins in six games. Texas jumps up to 35-6 on the year. They've got 12 ranked wins overall. This is the number, Kyle, 307-86. They've outscored opponents 307
a lot
to 86 this year. That is a lot. To
a little.
So they're probably going to do some more of that because they're going to Larry, Lawrence, Kansas this weekend to take on the Jayhawks. They're right outside the top 25, a good squad. But let's be honest, like, Texas is elite this year, and there's no two ways around it. That brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. The less successful Diamond team, the Texas Longhorns baseball team, split the week midweek series with Texas State, much like they did last year, and then take the season series after some dramatics against last place U of H. It was a 1-9, 9-1 drubbing on Friday. Saturday got the 6-5 win on the go-ahead run in the ninth, and then Sunday, 13-8, they had an 8-run ninth inning to get that done. The Texas State series was weird because they had a 7-3 game in San Marcos, a 9-1 game in Austin. LBJ struggled, continues to struggle, looks like a completely different guy than we were expecting him to be this year.
Yeah, and you know, that first game started in San Marcos. They finished the ninth inning of it at the dish. So two games technically at the dish. They won the first, if you want to feel good about it, but just one inning. But then lost pretty badly, right? The 7-3 LBJ pitched in San Marcos, gave up, you know, they only gave up six hits on the day. He gave up four of them, you know, gave up two runs in two innings. It was not tremendous work, though. Chase Loomis looked good with five shutout innings. Jared Thomas had two home runs in that first game. Like, there were some good things to take from it. But when you have the 7-3 loss at the dish, and then you go to Houston on Friday after your midweek loss at home, kind of licking your wounds. And again, that's where you typically see LBJ, but he's not the Friday starter anymore. And they fall 9-1, right? 1-9 in Houston's favor. It's in Houston, but still, you had Grubbs giving up five runs in five innings, and Texas only mustering two hits. Luckily, Will Gasparino had a solo home run to even get us on the board there. But only getting two hits after, again, falling midweek to Texas State 7-3, the pitchforks were out, the furor was high, and then you basically had Saturday where they could have lost that game, and they get the go ahead run in the ninth to win 6-5, and then Sunday they could have lost that game, probably should have lost that game, trailing 8-5 heading into the ninth inning. Some ninth inning heroics really saved the series and maybe saved someone's job. I'm not a fire the coach guy, but you don't win those two games again to last place U of H if somehow you don't get those ninth inning moves and you get swept after a midweek loss at home to Texas State that they just throttled you. That's a bad week. Again, the writing is very different. That's kind of how it's been all year. It's even the wins feel ugly and nothing makes you feel good. But they got out with another Big 12 series win. And I mean, if you measure things just like that, I guess a good weekend. Give D. Kennedy, you know, mixing it up. D. Kennedy getting the go-ahead homer in the Saturday game with a pair of solo home runs on Saturday. That's great to see some other guys contributing a bit there. I don't know, Gerald. Where's your temperature at on this team?
They're winning the series, right? So it's hard to be like too fire and brimstone. But at some point, the pitching continues to struggle. The pitching continues to regress. They've got a position player out there tonight pitching, which is just absolutely silly. So, I mean, when your head coach is a pitching coach, there's something to be said, right? They've cycled through pitching coaches and landed on the head man. So there's something,
yeah.
Right? Jared Thomas is on the bump tonight as we're recording, which seems silly. But again, you know, I'm the last guy to go on the fire the coach rant or the fire the coach rave. But at some point, right, we have to look and say the pitching sucks. The pitching is not great right now. There are people leaving the team mid-season, and the common denominator seems to be the head coach.
Yeah, Grant Fontenot no longer with the team. I mean, it's a little bit of a, again, when you're putting position players out. And look, I'll give Jared Thomas the credit that he's getting his first collegiate start when you listen to this on Tuesday. Like, he's a gamer, competitive guy. I'm sure he begged to get a chance. He threw some summer stuff, I think. He was a pitcher in high school. He'll be, you know, go be Brooks Kieschnick. Go ahead and be a pitcher, DH, best player both ways. Fine with it. But they need to figure something out if they want to salvage. It looks like Gage Bohm out of the, you know, bullpen has been kind of their most consistent. Duplantier has his moments. Ace Whitehead had you know, some luck there for a while. Seems that teams are getting to him a little bit. I don't know. I mean, that Sunday game when they had to come from behind, they did give the ball on Sunday to LeBaron Johnson, and he got chased in the third inning. So there's regression with your ace. There's injuries, sure, but there's players leave. It just feels like he doesn't trust them. They don't trust him. There's just trouble is a brewing. But then you go and look at the Big 12 baseball standings, and Texas is two games back. They're two games back from West Virginia at the top of the conference right now. So, you know, they get hot and you know, TCU, who we thought was going to be the favorite, has really, really struggled. They're towards the bottom. Does Texas turn it around with a sweep or something and change the narrative? I don't know. But I don't think they're a quad one team right now. I think they're going to need to win their conference to talk about tournament postseason, which is crazy for a Texas baseball team. Again, I do want to focus on the really cool stuff. 8-run ninth inning when you're trailing, good for them, right? If there's a turning point that was, hey, on that Saturday game, they came back, they fought back. Peyton Powell 4-for-5, Kimball Schuster 3-for-4. Some guys getting it going. Powell, as hot as he started, had fallen down. If he gets it going again, that helps with the bats, which have been good. But then, you know, when you're trailing 8-to-5 and you get three home runs in the ninth, including the Jalen Flores, Big 12 leading 14th home run. It's good. Like, you know, the bats really aren't the problem right now. It is the arms. Can they find a right combination? Or is it just to throw a guy out there each night and see who you know, is hot and the luck of the draw? I don't like that. But that kind of feels like where we're at right now.
Yeah, it does. So up next for the Longhorns, again, they've got Rio Grande Valley on Tuesday, the day that you're listening to this, and then got TCU over the weekend. Number 4 men's tennis outright wins the Big 12 title on Senior Day. You've got 6 fellows honored there: Elliot Spaziri, Micah Braswell, Sio Moledab, Cleve Harper, Evan McDonald, and Ishan Taluri. A 7-0 sweep of BYU over on Sunday finished the season 19-3, or the regular season, I guess, 19-3 with six top 15 wins and three in the top five.
Yeah, this was usually we would lead with a Big 12 championship, but we already celebrated that they had already secured at least a part of it. Seeing them, you know, get this good closeout, you know, getting the strong win on senior day, as many seniors are on this team, getting that sweep of Baylor, you know, softball sweep, men's tennis sweep, love to see it. It's a great, great way to finish for a team that has all the expectations still, everything's still on the table. They're sitting at number four, finishing strong. I think this is like a 10 match winning streak for them. They're looking good, right? They finished 19-3 with six top 15 wins. Three top five wins. Their losses were to number one, number two, and at the semis at the ITA indoors. I think at least one of those that lost to number one was, you know, a 4-3 last set type of situation. So they're right in the hunt. They just couldn't earlier in the season get the breaks to go their way, and they lost some heartbreakers. If they're able to switch it up now as they head into the postseason, they're playing really, really well at the right time, and you know the talent's there. With all those seniors, everyone coming back, this is what it built towards.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Texas, or this is how they're building toward a national championship run, right? And so the Big 12 tournament will propel them to that, likely. They got BYU on Friday, and Stillwater will continue through that, hopefully, to take another trophy with them to the SEC. On the ladies' side, number 8 wins out on the road. They beat number 40, TCU, 4-1 in Fort Worth, and then sweep number 34, Baylor, in the season finale in Waco to finish their regular season 19-4 with five top 15 wins.
Yeah, and if you want to look similarly, right, those losses that they had were twice to the number one Oklahoma State Cowgirls. The only reason that they didn't, you know, win the Big 12 is Oklahoma State went undefeated, not just in conference, but all year. They are the number one team. They won the indoor nationals. They're a really, really good team. It sucks that the Big 12 tennis championships are in Stillwater, which helps. But, you know, Texas lost twice to them. Maybe they can get one back here in the Big 12 postseason. And then they lost at number 3 Stanford, and I'm not really counting it, but at number 16 UCLA to open the season when half the team was out with an illness. So they're, you know, not a lot of losses and all really close ones. All three of their losses with a full squad were, you know, 3-4 where it came down to the last final set. So everything also there for the playing for this team. A lot of seniors we mentioned last week for their senior night already. A lot of seniors as well for the women's team. You know, you have a great class coming in behind it for next year, but it's going to look very different. So, you know, even though they're not in that top five range, they're a dangerous team that can hang with anyone in the country. And, man, they would like to just get over after a couple close losses to Oklahoma State, get over that one and you know, maybe steal it in the postseason, beat them in the Big 12, and then go beat them in the national championships as well. So a lot to play for both tennis teams.
Lot to play for left. Again, Texas 12-1 in conference. Up next, again, they've got a 2 seed. They're behind Oklahoma State in Stillwater starting on Thursday. They get the winner of the 7-10 seed matchup there. Number 2, Rowing, gets back to their winning conditions. Texas sweeps all 4 races at number 9, Michigan. They were a little bit rough, the conditions out there, but Texas managed to come out on top and hopefully set themselves up for a natty because the Director's Cup is close.
Yeah, and this is a big one, right? This right now, Stanford number 1, Texas number 2, our friend Brett's Director Cup dates showed some very, very laughably close Stanford-Texas finish to the season, if all things hold. So keep your eye on Rowing. It might come down, as it has in years past, to the final boat at the NCAA championships to determine who gets the Director's Cup. So watch Rowing. Rowing just getting started, seems to be getting their oars under them, I believe is the phrase that no one's ever said, but I'm going to.
I think it makes sense. It checks out to me. Next up for Texas, they've got the Longhorn Invite on April 27th. They welcome Stanford and Virginia and Ohio State, three of the other big conference champions of the nation. They've got these four programs have combined to win 9 of the last 14 NCAA championships there. The track and field distance team was in action this weekend at the Brian Clay Invitational. We had four athletes, set or break into the top 10 in school history, including Ava Jess, who broke the 10,000 meter record, which was 2 minutes better than her previous personal best, and I think beat it by like a tenth of a second, which is great for her. The whole track team will be back in action on Wednesday at the Mount SAC Relays. Number 7 women's golf team finishes 7th at the Silverado Showdown. Say 7th Silverado Showdown 3 times fast. Selina Liao finished 4th in just her 3rd collegiate tournament. Only 7 players were under par in that one. Cindy Sue was 13th for that. They've got the Big 12 championships in Houston this weekend. On the men's side, the men started the intercollegiate today, the Western Intercollegiate in Santa Cruz, California, currently sitting number 11th at 16 over, although Nathan Petronzio, Nathan Petronzio currently tied for 4th at 2 under. And then finally, beach volleyball closes out their season, getting their first ranked win in program history over the Island Aggies, number 20, Texas A&M Corpus Christi, 4-1 in Austin.
Yeah, good season. Stein Metzger's first season here, 7-8 as his first season as coach. Next season, they actually count. But, you know, a good year getting that ranked win to close it out is pretty big. The number one pairing of Katie Hashman and Emma Grace Robertson had a season best 8-4 record, again, at the top. So it shows Texas has the talent. They just need to put it together. They need to learn how to win, how to you know, get there as a team. You know, all kinds of wins around Ava Patton and Presley Wright. Also won Aiden Ames, if you remember the big volleyball recruit who came from Nebraska to Texas, Hannah Ogden, as well as Reagan Rutherford and Jenna Wienes, who you remember from the hardwood volleyball team as well. So as they build out that team, as they get their full sand team, as they get into year 2 of Stein Metzger's program, as they continue to recruit, continue to position themselves as, you know, a elite team in this sport, I picture Bevo, that's beach volleyball, being very good in the coming years when they can actually bring home trophies starting next year.
Let's get it. Metzger does nothing but win championships, so we will get back to that next year.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. World number 1, Scottie Scheffler wins his 2nd Masters in 3 years. A final round 4-under-68 to post a 4-stroke victory. I believe it. The stat going around was he's the first player in a 3-year span to win twice by more than 3 strokes. Like a short burst of dominance that even Tiger couldn't quite match, nor Jack. So good on Scotty, setting himself in the record books, 4th youngest to be a multi-time winner. Just a really, really, really great showing for Scotty. He was locked in, especially as the tournament went on. He seemed to get better and other people seemed to fade. It's that mentality of a champion that so clearly right now he is the best golfer in the world.
Turn that green jacket burnt orange. No, 18th player to win the Masters multiple times, the 4th youngest behind some names you may recognize and then one that's good, but I mean Jack and Tiger, right, are the two big ones in that one.
You put some respect on Seve Ballesteros' name, please.
I mean, Seve is great, but like Jack, Tiger, Seve, those are different categories. Let's just be real here. 10th major championship victory for him. Combined 5 Masters wins by 3 different players for the University of Texas. So absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it is very great. The 5th Masters, like you said, burnt orange and green go together pretty well. Just really cool. Scotty had to do it without his wife. The interview afterwards where he was basically like, I want to be anywhere else. I just want to go home. I want to go see my wife. He was he said if Meredith would have gone into labor as she was at the hospital, I think on Friday or Saturday, he would have just left in the middle of the tournament. And I believe him. Like the guy, there's one thing in the world he loves more than golf or money or anything, and that's his wife. If you ever see him talk about her, he usually tears up when he talks about her. He just loves that woman, calls her his source of strength, and really admitted very openly, like, I don't want to be here answering questions. I just want to get home to her and, you know, meet my child if they come. So, you know, an incredible emotional journey weekend for Scotty. Glad it worked out where he could finish it and still be the dad who gets to be there for his child, first child being delivered. Gerald, 9 former Longhorns set for the 2024 NBA playoffs. I'm just going to run through a list here. You tell me who you're rooting for. You have Jared Allen and Tristan Thompson with the Cavs. Mo Bamba with the 76ers. Obviously, Kevin Durant with the Suns. Jackson Hayes for the Lakers. PJ Tucker and Kai Jones for the Clippers. Jericho Sims for the Knicks. And then our guy, Miles Turner, on the Pacers. Who are you rooting for?
I don't love any, like, PJ Tucker and probably PJ Tucker, like, if there's any of them that I'm really, like, going to go to bat for. I can't cheer for the Lakers as a lifelong, like, sure, Spurs supporter. I can't do it. I want to see Kai Jones get the comeback story, right? Mm. Like, cut the blue hair, like, seems to be on the up and up. Maybe his meds are right or whatever it might be, but, you know, things are turning up for him. So, yeah, we'll go Clippers. We'll go Clippers.
A Clippers-Cavs finals to get the max amount of Longhorns. Two Longhorns on each of those. Very unlikely, but I love it. Gerald, the portal opened this week, and it has been active across a couple sports. We'll mention a couple different things. On the football side, we had Samaje Burrell left the team, went into the portal. Peyton Kirkland and Billy Walton were the two that came out today as we were recording this. What are you thinking about that, Gerald? Is this the last we're going to hear, either coming or going? Is the portal here to stay?
Well, the portal's here to stay, yeah, for sure. But Texas started fall camp with, or a spring camp with 89 guys. So you knew they had to get down. Four were going to be leaving at some point, right? Burrell, we know the legal situation with him. Like, mm-hmm. I hope he gets a second chance. He's a good ball player. He seems to be a good kid. Made some dumb choices hanging out with the wrong people. That's, get some help. Get your life in order, right? Peyton Kirkland, a guy who I was excited about.
Yeah.
But it seems like Texas can't hit on Florida kids. Yeah. And then Billy Walton. Billy Walton is a guy who's like program guy, loves the university, but his life exemplifies as soon as you sign, they're recruiting your replacement, right? Because Texas not only got an edge in the portal, but they added Colin Simmons at the edge. So, like, Billy Walton just got recruited over. He's a great kid, and I want to see him. SMU has some early smoke, according to our friend Mike Roach, so I'd love to see him land there and do some good stuff for him. So, I don't know where they land. They can't go to the SEC, so that limits their options to schools that they want to play at. But, again, more power to them. I think hopefully they all find a spot where they can thrive and grow and be a big part of football in the future.
Yeah, OU really wanted Peyton Kirkland and is struggling a bit with the offensive line, so they would love, I'm sure, to get him back, but that no SEC transfers does count between Texas and OU as of this portal season, which kind of love to see it. But yeah, Billy Walton was the one I really wanted to work out, just wanted him to be successful, that South Oak Cliff pipeline. But yeah, going back to Dallas makes some sense there. Talking of Florida, Gerald, I went back and looked at it. You tell me which of these have been unmitigated successes from the state of Florida. And I'll just listen. If I missed anyone who was like a JUCO transfer who's originally from Florida, I apologize. But players whose immediate school, typically high school, was Florida, was a Florida address, I counted here. DeAndre Robinson, who we know decommitted, yep, and made his way back to Florida. CJ Baxter.
Okay.
Yeah. Peyton Kirkland, who we just talked about. Jaden Alexis.
Okay.
Back at USF. Marcus Tillman. Dele Odeaway, okay. A couple linebackers there.
Okay, Dele had some games.
Yeah, yeah, he definitely contributed some. I think he had a nice career, not exceptional, but nice. Jordan Pouncey, remember him, the wide receiver?
I do.
He just finally stopped being in school. I feel like he was here for forever, and then at U of F for forever. John Burt. Maybe the most productive career out of all of those we just listed. CJ Baxter, obviously a chance to pass him up. The Florida Five, Gerald, you remember Cecil Cherry, Tim Irvin, Gilbert Johnson, Devontae Davis, and then the tight end Clarington. Devontae Davis was the pick of the litter, I guess, out of those.
I forgot about the Florida Five. I didn't forget about the Florida Five, but the Florida Five was forgettable.
I went and looked all of those guys up. No one really went on to do anything as advertised about them where they came.
A couple of them didn't even academically qualify, if memory serves.
Correct. And I think, you know, even you'd think, okay, maybe they eventually got there. Like, I think Cherry may have played at East Carolina. Like, just didn't, no one really made, I think Tim Irvin originally went to Auburn, but then ended up somewhere much smaller. A lot of them.
Not Auburn.
Yeah. Cherry actually may have gone to Grambling, and Tim Irvin may have gone to East Carolina. Anyways, I'm forgetting, but basically none of them, Devontae Davis honestly probably had the most successful career just by playing at Texas. The last two, Gerald, this is going back to 2010, these are probably the two most successful, and they are the eldest on this list. Andrew Beck and Chris Nelson.
Okay, okay. I can get down with that. I like some Chris Nelson. Obviously, Andrew Beck was Andrew Beck. So, yeah, I think that's...
Yeah.
I mean, gotta... hopefully, C.J. Baxter breaks the
cut. I think that's it, right? I think Andrew Beck, a better NFL player than college. Chris Nelson, a really good college player. You know, solid for us, and that gif of him rubbing his belly, always be famous. It defensive tackle you here at the University of Texas. But I do think that list is woefully lacking with a lot of stars. Fives and four stars littered through that list I just read off. They have not lived probably up to that level of hype. So CJ Baxter, no pressure, kid. It's all on you. All right, Gerald, speaking of four and five stars making their way in, four-star linebacker Elijah Beaubarnes, one of the better names of recent ilk in Texas football recruiting history, officially commits this week, the 6'3", 230-pound linebacker from Dallas Skyline. I really like big Texas linebackers. It feels like we haven't had these guys in a while.
Yeah, I've talked about it before. The state of Texas does not put out elite linebackers all the time, right? Like, if you think about you know, what Texas has, most of the linebackers on the Texas squad are either not from the state or converted from another position. So the fact that not only is there Elijah Beaubarnes, but right in the class, but you also have Riley Pettijohn in there as well. And so go watch Barnes's tape, because he's real, real good. And so this is like an opportunity for Texas to stay in state and bolster one of the groups that has been good, but it's always been precarious for the last several years, where it's like the linebackers are good, but it's very thin, right? You get past the first couple. And so landing not one, but two top, you know, I wouldn't be shocked, if Barnes didn't jump up a couple of spots just based on what he does in the coming year, because this junior film is real, real nice. So I'm excited to see what that looks like. And obviously, Pettijohn is like the bell cow of this class. Most folks think he's a Texas lean at this point, but he's still got visits. He's got three visits on the book, USC, Florida State, he in Texas. So those would be the three schools to watch in that one. So yeah, we'll see how it goes for it. But I mean, these two, if Texas can land both of those two guys, and again, we're talking about Barnes, just go watch his tape.
Yeah.
Go watch his tape.
Yeah.
So good. And again, Dallas kid, Chris Gilbert back on campus. Praise Hallelujah.
No, I love it. I mean, you're right, Gerald. If he jumps up, his tape jumps out. If he jumps up the rank, he's already a top 100 in the composite, just outside it in the 247 rank. He's the number 13 consensus linebacker across composite and 247. And you just look at the offer list, right? He chose the Longhorns over Ohio State, Oregon, and Alabama. I like that. I like beating those schools for any position, but linebacker especially. So like getting him in. Excited to see what the future holds there. Portal is not just for football. Recruiting is not just for football, Gerald. We have some basketball news to cover as well. Portal has been active this week already. A couple portal outs and one NIL release on the outward bound train station. Dylan Mitchell also entering the draft, but also entering the transfer portal. And then Tyrese Hunter just straight to the portal, and four-star guard Cam Scott released from his NLI.
That's the second year in a row where Rodney Terry has lost one of his marquee guys. They've still got the big fish in the boat, so we'll see how it goes. But I think some of it has to do with what they were targeting to bring in as well. So,
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how it works out.
And I think you start right there, Gerald. I think the marquee transfer in, and this feels a little bit different than some of Texas's transfers. This is where Asemus was just a glorified scorer, a guy who did it at a, you know, mid-major level, but did it prolifically. And Tyrese Hunter was a guy who had a great freshman year and tournament run as we got him. And you know, some of our other portal scorers just didn't have the pedigree that I think you get with this player. Arkansas's Tre'Mon Mack, right? He's a 6'6 shooting guard who last year in the SEC for Arkansas averaged, you know, 16 points, 4.5 rebounds. He really thrived, originally committing to U of H, really thrived at U of H in their last year deep tournament run when they had injuries devastate their team. He was the guy who stepped up. I think he had a 30-point game in that tournament. And again, just doing it in the SEC on an Arkansas team that was kind of started strong, but really just kind of crumbled around him. He was the constant, the guy who shows he can get the ball in the hoop to the tune of, you know, 17-ish points a game against SEC talent every week. I like that. I like that proven scorer, a kid from Dickinson from the Houston area making his way back to Texas. I really like him as the marquee kind of player, and that might be some combination of Cam Scott there and maybe some of the other, you know, Tyrese Hunter, though he's less of a ball handler, more of a ball scorer. I think it starts with Tremont Mack. And then really interesting is the package of Indiana State players who came in, including Indiana State's Julian Larry, the 6'3 point guard, and Jason Kent, the 6'8 small forward.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out again. The Larry Birds, which was a trivia question for me earlier this week, so it's great. But yeah, I mean, we'll see how Rodney Terry's group shakes itself out in this one.
That's the Indiana State Sycamores. But the Indiana State Larrys, that is where Larry Bird went. So pretty good getting a Larry from Indiana State. One who shoots 46% from three-point range in Julian Larry, as well as the Conference Defensive Player of the Year, average 11 points, 5 assists. Jason Kent, again, that size is what I really like. 8 rebounds, 6'8 is a small forward. It's Dylan Mitchell, but a guy who can shoot it a little bit better. He shot, you know, inside a lot. He shot 36% from outside, but really he shot 64% from the field, mostly from pounding it inside. He's athletic. He's tall. I like it as a you know, direct Dylan Mitchell replacement there. You know, again, 13.5, eight rebounds. A solid tandem. Didn't necessarily expect it. They had such a Cinderella year, going all the way to the NIT championship after they inexplicably got left out of the tournament. But I didn't necessarily look at that team and think, a couple Longhorns coming. But I do like when I look at the stats and look at the tape of the guys they've taken in so far. It's an interesting start to the roster that RT is putting together. And they'll need to get it together, and they'll need to get it together quickly, because it was just announced today as well. Men's basketball and Ohio State basketball will meet in a neutral site game at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas on November 4th to effectively kick off as the first game of the NCAA season in 2024.
I mean, it's exciting to see. I think it'll be fun to watch. I don't love neutral site games, like, in anything. I think it makes more sense in basketball than it does in football, but I mean, it'll be fun to watch. I like watching them play Ohio State. I think it'll be, again, marquee matchups. It's why Texas is Texas.
Yes, I agree with you. I think getting Ohio State and Texas for a neutral site game in Vegas is good. Two of the largest fan bases in the country. It makes sense what Vegas, they know what they're doing. No Longhorns gone, Gerald, as we're recording this on Monday in the WNBA draft. Shayla Gonzalez wasn't drafted, but former Longhorn Celeste Taylor joined Caitlin Clark as the second pick for the Indiana Fever. So they're bringing some youth and some talent into the backcourt. Remember Celeste at her time, big recruit, bounced her way around, I think Duke, Tech, as well, before she concluded her career. But congrats to former Longhorn Celeste Taylor. Gerald, speaking of former Longhorns, four Longhorns in the most recent 9-person Texas Sports Hall of Fame class of 2024, which will be inducted, was inducted this past weekend on Saturday, April 13th. That is, maybe you've heard of these names, Jamal Charles, Colt McCoy from the football team, as well as Bubba Thornton from track and field, and Krista Williams from the softball team.
I feel very old, is what I'm going to say to that. Jamal Charles, Colt McCoy, guys that we watched on campus, right? Absolutely ridiculous. But glad to have them in there. Obviously, Bubba Thornton, Krista Williams, both legends on the 40. So, yeah. And again, Mike Leach making it in. Mm-hmm. Texas Tech still owes him money, so hopefully that works out. Yeah.
I love seeing a 9-person class and four of them are Longhorns. That feels about right. Maybe should be a little bit higher, 5 out of 9, but we'll take it. Speaking of taking it, Bruce Burke, sitting with the number one recruiting class, said, "Why don't I just take one more?" As women's tennis signs international standout Carmen Herrera. I'm sure I am saying that in a way that is Texan and not of her native Romania, but a native of Bucharest. She's one of the top junior players in the world, and the rich get richer.
The recruiting class was already at the top of the basket, top of the bunch, with three players in there already: Ashton Bowers, Maya Joint, and Ariana Angazzi Porso. Is what we're going with.
I like it.
So she's going to be AAP when the time comes.
She will.
So the team continues to grow and reload. So exciting times for tennis.
All right, Jared, let's get to our closeout here. Godzillatron, what have you been watching on your giant screen?
Not a big watching week for me. I am doing my audiobook, trying to plow through that. Cibola Burn is the next one in the series I'm reading, the Expanse series. It's some hard sci-fi stuff that I absolutely love. I'm also finishing up The Fires of Vengeance, which is that African-inspired fantasy series with dragons that I'm absolutely loving. Did that again, watched some anime this week because I needed some mindless stuff to do while I worked. And then for family night, pizza night, movie night, I watched one of the worst movies I've ever seen, Woody Woodpecker Goes to Camp on Netflix. It's awful.
Don't do it. You're not recommending
it. Don't do it. I whatever the opposite of a recommendation is, that's how I feel about that.
A disrecommendation. Yes.
Stay away from it.
Yeah. If Ernest Goes to Camp, are you recommending that?
Yes.
Okay.
Always.
All right.
Always.
All right. So it's not the going to camp that gets you. It's this specific film. Okay. Fair enough. Gerald, I watched a lot of Masters, watched a lot of golf this weekend. The Masters app is so tremendous. Shout outs, by the way, to Austin native and CBS legend Vern Lundquist, called his last Masters, and you know had some great Scotty Scheffler calls. Loved Scotty was in the lead, so it was all Scotty. So you get the main broadcast team covering Scotty. Nance still there, but a part of childhood with Vern making his way into the twilight. Congrats on a legendary career and a singular voice of SEC football and the Masters in CBS golf. But I watched a couple other things this week. I started a show, Palm Royale, which is an Apple TV. Got a free couple months Apple TV, so trying to get some shows there. Palm Royale is Kristen Wiig, who my wife and I both adore and love. Her SNL last week was tremendous. But yeah, her the show is good. It's not like her funniest stuff. It's charming, it's funny, it's her, but it's not just like a just straight up laugh out loud comedy. It's set in like early 1970s, late 1960s, at the Palm Royale, which is this exclusive Florida beach club that everyone wants in. And I looked it up. It is real. All the stars did go. The Sinatras and et cetera made their way for the event season. It's just high society inside this club, and how she's an interloper who's made her way in. It's just a good watch. Like, I love the sets, the designs, the time period, how it looks. She's charming. Allison Janney, who's one of my favorite actors of all time, you know, loved her since The West Wing, is great in it. Strong cast. Just Ricky Martin is tremendous in it, actually. It's great. It's a fun hang. You know, it's just a good throw on and watch one. And then that's the beginning of something. The end, I did watch the Curb Your Enthusiasm finale. The last season, I think I may have talked about it already. Like, I'm going to always watch it. You know, I like Curb more than Seinfeld, and I don't think that's even at this point a particularly, like, crazy opinion. It's just more modern. It's gone on longer. He's got to do all the stuff he didn't during Seinfeld. Last season was funny, but it, like, just seemed like he did stuff that made him laugh, which is fine. But the finale was a callback to the Seinfeld finale, which is universally loathed and said to be screwed up. And they really are tongue in cheek about it in a way that's just very perfect and feels very Larry David. If you like Curb, if you like Larry, catch the last season or at least catch the finale. It's I think it goes out on all the right notes. It's not warm, it's not fuzzy, it's Larry and spoiler Jerry being prickly and curmudgeonly, and it's all the things that you love it for. It's a warm hug of Larry David elbows, you know, as bony and uncomfortable as you could imagine a hug is from that guy. But I thought it was great, and probably do another rewatch at some point because I do love that show.
The HBO show. Shows continue to be best rewatch fodder. I'm about to dive in on a Wire rewatch, I think.
Nice.
It's about time for that. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I'm going just a little bit here off of the, you know, the purview of this podcast necessarily. We know that we talk about college basketball, but it's no secret that both the hosts of this podcast are San Antonio Spurs fans. I am an ardent Victor Wembanyama fan. I think he's just the most tremendous thing that's happened to basketball, men's basketball, in a long, long time. As women's college basketball, due to multiple reasons, the players staying for 4 years, whatever, building their kind of brand and legacy has become more popular and more must-watch than men's. You're seeing a ton of great players, must-watch players in the NBA, but as a rookie, Victor Wembanyama lived up to all the hype, made himself the must-watch, you know, ticket, the must-see TV of the league. And I'm just going to run through a couple of his accolades from his rookie season. The youngest player in NBA history to have a 40-20 game. The only player in NBA history, not rookie, but player in NBA history with 1,500 points, 250 blocks, and 100 three-pointers. He's the fourth ever to have 1,500, 250 assists to go with those 250 blocks, joining Hakeem, Kareem, and David Robinson. He's the fastest player to reach 1,000 blocks, 500 rebounds, 1,000 points, 500 rebounds, and 150 blocks. First player in NBA history to average a 5x5 over a two-game span. Only 15 players have ever had a 5x5, by the way. He's the youngest of those to do it. The youngest player to ever record a 20-20 game. The youngest player to record a triple-double with blocks. The youngest center to record a triple-double. The youngest player in NBA history to record a triple-double with zero turnovers. Only player in NBA history to average at least 20 points, 10 rebounds, 3 blocks, and a 3-pointer per game. Only player in NBA history to have 250 blocks, 250 assists, and 100 threes in a season. Second player ever to record back-to-back 5 steals, 5 blocks games. The other is MJ. Listen to these names when I say the other is. He's either doing things no one's done or the other people who've done them are stupid company to be in as a rookie. Second player ever to record 25, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, 5 blocks in a game. Hakeem is the other. Averaged 20 points, 10 rebounds, 3 blocks in the season. Last player to do this was Shaq in his MVP season. You heard that right. Most consecutive double-doubles by a teenager. Remember, he's still a teenager. In NBA history, second youngest player to record 10 blocks in a game. He led the NBA this year in blocks, led the NBA in stocks. Of course, we know steals plus blocks. The first rookie with 300 stocks since Shaq. He averaged more blocks this season than the Miami Heat, for instance. He just finished his rookie season averaging 21.4, 10.6 rebounds, 3.9 assists, 1.2 steals, and 3.6 blocks per game. Also, while not playing a ton of minutes, his per 48s are even better. I won't get into those. But the first player in post-merger NBA history to average those numbers that he did for a season. He is wild. He is something we've never seen before. He's changing the game as we see it. His new logo may be the best NBA logo in years, sports athlete logo in years. We are standing for our guy Wemby. Congrats on a tremendous season. We've only just begun.
And that's your NBA minute for 4 minutes or whatever you want to call it for the week. Now, I'm banging the drum really quickly on Texas and NIL. So if you missed it, Quintravious Ewers got his latest NIL deal announced this week with a private jet company. And I just want to say, like, it is incredible to be at the University of Texas. And say what you want about NIL. It is what it is. You got to play the game. And Texas is playing it just as good, if not better, than almost everybody else in the country. And so the star players and quarterbacks continue to get one up. Bijan got a Lambo. Quinn got a private jet. Now I'm assuming that Arch or whoever takes over for Quinn is going to sign an NIL deal with NASA. I'm assuming that's the only way that you could outdo a private. Maybe you sign a NIL deal with Delta or Southwest. I don't know. I don't know if it's better or worse than a private. I don't know. The check might be bigger. But either way, ridiculous ups for Quinn. And again, the University of Texas continues to set the standard in the NIL game.
Quinn-IL, I love to see it. I think at one point he had like the Austin Professional Rodeo team as an NIL deal. I think at one point he had like an outdoors company clothing line. He has an eclectic portfolio he's putting together, my guy, in the Quinn-IL. But yes, Arch to SpaceX, you heard it here first.
The best one for Quinn was getting the offensive lineman hooked up with Luke Casey.
Yeah.
That was the right way to go. But that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can we get folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter @KyleCarbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer @TexasPregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week talking about all sorts of stuff. Kyle might not be back, but we'll see how it goes. Thank you so much for tuning in again. And until next time,
hook 'em, baby.